Yeah, whatever you call it. Everyone right now, stand up. Tuning into our very first podcast. This would be our second episode, and I hope you guys enjoyed.
With this episode, we wanted to have just a little discussion on some ideas that we came up with, and it took us a while to come up with what to talk about in our next episode, which is this current episode. But I guess we're here now, so we enjoyed all the feedback though from the last episode. And for this episode, we planned on talking about tips to be useful as an engineer to yourself and to your teammates, and better collaboration with teammates, how to be useful in general as
a person. So basically, how not to be a TED user screen. So we just want to talk about how to actually
collaborate. How not to be annoying.
Yeah, how to collaborate effectively with your team members, and how to actually feel like you're actually contributing to whatever thing you and team members are actually working on.
We talked about a couple of ideas, and we realized that by being useful to your team members, you would end up being useful to yourself in general. And sometimes in the software engineering industry, we do things not thinking about the future or not thinking about the relevance to someone else. Maybe you might just be doing something now thinking that probably you're the only person who is going to use it or going to get involved in whatever you're building or working on. But then later, plans change, directions change, new ideas come in. Because of your initial bad habits of not thinking about how useful you can be to others as well, things become difficult.
So tell me, you've been on quite a number of teams. Do you have any sort of guidelines as to how you approach your team members and how you actually collaborate with them?
Yeah, so speaking about guidelines, I think a year ago or so, I don't remember how long, I published this article on Medium where the article was basically titled How to Effectively Contribute, or Guidelines for Successful Contribution and Team Collaboration. And there's a lot of things I talked about. It was a pretty long article. There's a lot of things I talked about, and I think a lot of those ideas might be relevant here, since there are things to which I experienced in my career. And the first thing which I think is quite important is how very important it is to read guides, read documentation. So everywhere you find yourself, you always have to read the guide, read the documentation. If it's a team, if it's anywhere you find yourself, you always have to make it a point to read.
Well, I think what the thing with documentation, well, most teams normally don't have documentation, but documentation is actually a good point or a good place to start when you join a new team, because that's where you know what kind of code base they have, what the code base is supposed to do, and stuff like that. So if you have any questions that the documentation will give you, hints as to how to structure questions and what kind of questions to ask your team members and stuff like that. So documentation is always a good place to start when joining a team.
Yeah, that's actually very true. The beauty about this too is that I feel like a lot of the non-software engineer people or non-tech people, I don't know how to put it, but let's say people who are into tech but are not necessarily coders or software engineers could actually benefit from this, because reading guides, reading documentation, reading relevant information always making that a priority doesn't always have to do with code as well, but reading documentations, reading guides, reading things about a company you work with, just reading in general is like the industry equivalent of knowing the law.
Yeah, because that's if any information or any knowledge you want to acquire, you need to do it by reading, because there's a standard mode of communication. Well, not standard mode of communication, but standard mode of acquiring knowledge. Fine, YouTube videos are great, tutorials are great, but then we actually brought up learning or knowing stuff by reading textbooks and stuff. So I think by default, most of us acquire more knowledge through reading. So documentation is actually a great way to get to know a lot of things when you enter a company. So tell them, apart from reading documentations and diving into all the necessary documents in a company, what other things do you think people should do?
I think another thing which is important is communication. Communication is important because it saves a lot of people time. It saves people a lot of stress because everyone is busy, right? That's the idea. Everyone is busy. So how you communicate and how you communicate translates to how fast you get feedback and how much relevant information that you could get as well. So
yeah, so it's communication is actually key, because how you talk to people or how you approach them actually determines whether you get the help readily or not. And also, in my experience, I found out that most of the engineers have a passive aggressive tone in how they communicate or even how they send messages. And that's, to those who don't know, that's not to say that they are aggressive or anything, but then it's the best thing you don't take personal. It's just how most of them communicate. They will send some messages, you read it, and to anyone who's normal, we see them as them being aggressive and then, or being rude, but then most social engineers communicate in that mode, and it's best not to take it personal. And in terms of communication, for instance, if I'm at work and have an issue, and I need help from maybe a senior dev or a lead dev or something, how most leaders do it is, I'm like, hey, good morning. I have an issue here and I've tried this and I've tried that, it's still not working, I don't know if you can help me. Straight to the point, you sort of exchange pleasantries with a hey and good morning and that's it. And you go straight to the point because it's a working environment that no one needs to know about whose family is doing well and who's and how he's doing and stuff like that. It's at work, so obviously as well. And you go straight to the point and not just beat around the bush. So, and also, with communication, it's good to be clear as to what you need and not just leave things in the air. If you need help with a particular problem, you'd ask for the help. You should go straight to the point. If you need a suggestion, you ask that can the person suggest something to you. And if you need a thoughts on something, you ask them on that. So it's best that you actually go straight to the point and be clear on what you need or what you're requesting from the whatever the person you're communicating with.
Yeah, because that's totally true, because you can't just send someone a message hi and be expecting a response of the person saying hi back or hello before you start to relay your information, because what if the person responds hi in an hour or 2 hours or even the next day? And so are you going to wait for the person to respond hi back before you now tell him what you want? And probably at each and every interval, either of you was offline, and that's just going to be a complete waste of time. But like, rather maybe you say hi, and let's say you even want to have some form of a conversation, you say hi, the person doesn't respond in like a minute, and you just go straight to the point and list whatever you have to do. Because another thing I've noticed from my experience is that sometimes people are busy. So it's not like the person might even be offline, they might actually be occupied doing something else. But when you put your request out there, you put the information out there, it makes it easier for the person to easily provide you with your needs. So I say, hi, I need this, I need that, I need this API, I need this. anytime the person sees it, the person could just quickly send you what you need without having to exchange unnecessary pleasantries, because it's like, oh, what does this guy want now? And I think another thing too is this just doesn't go to maybe your working environment. Let's say you even want to message someone randomly on Twitter or within the community, and you require some assistance. Like, it's actually good to go straight to the point, because you're probably messaging a stranger and he doesn't know you, so he doesn't probably feel like he or she is obliged to reply your message, right? So then once you get your point out there, then they know your intentions, and that's actually a comfortable feeling. Okay, I know that this person is going to approach me on tech and needs some assistance with XYZ. So then the person has made their intentions known quickly, and then I could just help the person as soon as possible. But if a random stranger just messages gives you hi sometimes, right, it's really awkward, and a lot of people might not be comfortable with that. So I think that's the extent to what, yeah, how good communication can make things easier.
Yep, and to add to what you've said, I think there's this issue. I don't want to call it an issue, but it is really an issue with remote teams. So because post COVID, we realized that most teams are going remote and stuff like that. And on the issue of communication, I think most people or most developers need to know or to differentiate when to make a phone call and when to send a text message.
I still struggle with that, honestly.
Because there are some things that could just be said via text message, make it quick and short and then simple. But then some people just prefer to just make a phone call, and then you're on the call, then you realize that you're not needed on the call.
And people would even start a whole group chat or a meeting just to relay some information, and probably there's a general channel in your company, or there's a channel for your team which you could just drop the information in, and you just get wound up in a call.
That thing, it can really be annoying, especially if you're getting messages that has no relevance to you. So communication, knowing when and where to actually put it, your information or your text message is actually key. You need to know the kind of environment you're in. If it's something you need, like, you should know when to make a phone call or when to request for a call and when to send a text message, because a text message is actually faster, and also there's a history of the text message in there. But with a phone call, if it's not recorded, it means that whatever is said in there might just be lost to time or whatever. So I think that should also be noted, to be able to differentiate when a phone call is needed and when a text message is needed. And
you mentioned one very key thing, history. And I think in a lot of organizations, that's actually very important, because you need evidence of certain information being passed, be it by an email or text. There's a proof that you asked someone to do XYZ, and it's not just by word of mouth, which is lost, because at the end of the day, there's nothing to prove that you were asked to do a particular task. But then when you communicate through the right channels, it gives you a history, and that makes it easier to track activities.
Yep, communication issues, because you need to be able to tell. You need to be able to know that you've sent this message to this person. And also, even to developers. I for one prefer text messages, because if I ask for help from someone and the person like sort of says what I should do or what he suggests to do, I can always go back, I can always just use
a text
as a reference to know exactly what I'm working on, what I'm supposed to do.
And I think it saves you the stress of having to jot down notes when you're talking to another engineer, when they're explaining a task to you. It saves you the stress of having to jot down notes.
Yep. So yeah, I agree with that one. So I prefer text messages to phone calls. But later I'll use a phone call, maybe with pair programming, you need to be on a phone call for that, if you're not working on some of this. And the other point I would like to make, more or less like a side note, to most developers, is that when it comes to code reviews, you'd be surprised at some of the comments people pass in code reviews. Like, some of them are quite insulting and stuff. So, well, sometimes it's not your fault, and sometimes sometimes it's a junior writing the code, so he writes the code, and it requires certain comments. But then I'll plead. If you see that, I'll just ask that, you know, sometimes you should be nice with the review comments and stuff like that, because, well, everyone is trying to learn, right? And also with the juniors, it's best not to take it personal, because if you think those things personal, you just bet yourself or something. Or maybe if you feel like the company or the focus of the company is they are being way too rude, then you have the option of always opting out. But then, like I said, most of the engineers have this passive aggressive nature in them. I don't know why, but then you just do.
Yeah, so in addition, this is not to say that abusive behavior should be tolerated, and I think that depends a lot on the company's culture, or the culture that has come to be in the company, but it definitely shouldn't be tolerated 100%.
Yeah, another thing is in communication, especially over text, this is not much, should I say, so to it. Like, it's really hard to pick up the tone of a message in text. Like, someone could pass a comment as a joke, and you might find it offensive because of how you interpreted it, or you might even misjudge the person's tone. You might think the person is angry or trying to be disrespectful, whereas if the person actually said that comment in a voice chat or to your face, like, based on the person's tone, you could infer that, oh, okay, this is probably a joke. That being said, you probably also have to be kind of careful the kind of messages we send over text, especially if you're not on like really cordial terms with the person. Like, you're not the person's playmate, or you and the person just don't roll that way.
So basically, you should know the person you are communicating with. How, because if it's your colleague, you can sort of like play with the messages and stuff. If it's someone that you're not really familiar with, it's best to just stay or keep things formal. So just know the person you're sending messages to, and know how to construct those messages. And also, if someone sends an ambiguous message, it's best to normally ask questions and not to assume that this one else is trying to say. Because, like Salom said, you don't know the tone that actually uses in text messages. So it's best to actually clarify, ask several questions to clarify exactly what it meant by what it sent in the text.
Assuming is always bad. So, in the other point, that advice would actually help you in your relationship.
Look, I know it's not tech.
Oh my gosh.
What's up for a relationship? But I ain't getting some. You're not getting some, so I don't know how to help them, but I can pray for them. This is scary.
Yeah.
So, apart from communication and documentation, what else do you think should be a thing that people should to do?
The manner in which we ask for help or present our problems. I think that is,
you
need to be tactful on how we do that.
I think it actually links very well with the communication, because how you approach issues or how you ask questions pertaining to maybe problems you have is actually key to you getting them solved. If you need to know the problem, for example, you have a problem with a bag that you want to fix, you need to understand the problem or the bag at least tidy and have tried solving it on your own before actually going to ask for help. Because sometimes you just look at a thing and you feel like, oh, this thing, I don't know what's going on, and straight up you just start asking, or not knowing that those are things that they need to work on. So sometimes it's just good you try it at home for some time. If you're working out, then you immediately go to college, ask for help. And there is always a sweet spot, because sometimes you might wait too long and then the tax will hold and then you just delay.
Yeah.
So you need to also know when is a good time to, so like after trying, when is a good time to ask for help. And, like, so there should be a sweet spot where like you spend some good amount of hours trying it, and then after which you should
requesting help.
Yeah, because no one likes someone, like, no one likes to work or communicate to someone who is late to write. Like, you should have tried it out. You should have possibly come up with a solution. And it also translates to how quick you could get help. So, for instance, let's say someone on my team is working on a feature and then can't seem to figure something out. And it's like, okay, I can't do this. And just, yeah, I'm done. I can't do this. Hey, messages me. I can't do this. Like, why can't you do that? Like, what have you tried? And if you just message me saying you can't do that, it makes the work difficult for me because I have to do all of your work. And you're also probably not going to get a timely response from me because you need to ask yourself some questions like, okay, what is the problem, right?
And also, you tried it before asking for help, actually help the person you asked for, because like, I've tried this and tried that, it's not like it. So it actually narrows down.
Yeah, it narrows down
the taken area for the person who's been helped.
So then it gives the person like three options. So it's like, okay, you've tried this, it didn't work. Oh, okay, then it's definitely this. Then you try it out and oh wow, voila, it works. And you're good to go. So then it kind of like narrows down like the possible solutions that the person has to do. The person doesn't have to go through all the permutations of trying every single solution to try and help you figure out your problem, because majority of the time, in a lot of cases too, the work that you're going to do is probably the same thing that the person is also going to try. So if you're probably going to go on Google search or Stack Overflow to read on why this issue didn't work, the person might probably do the same thing. So at the end of the day, it's like, if you don't try and narrow down the problem for the person, it makes it difficult because you're going to have to, it's like you're going to bury the person with the duty of having to go through all the permutations to try and figure out your problem. And it also doesn't show that you're putting in effort to solving your problem.
Yeah. And one thing, sort of like a rule I have, is that if I ask someone for help, pertaining to an issue I have, and the person asks me a follow-up question, that means that I haven't asked the question properly. But you should ask the question, and I can't stress this enough. Your question should be as clear as possible and should contain all the necessary information the person needs to be able to help you out. And not just send this information and send like half information, not really the whole thing. Probably because you are shy to ask the help pertaining to something you deem simple. So it's best to just know, like, let's let go of your shyness and everything and your shame, and then just ask for help, and ask for help in the clearest way as much as possible. Just be clear on what you actually need. It can be something simple, something you think is simple but you're struggling with, but then it's good to be clear on it. If it's something you think that is, well, this is something you should do, but I can't do it, and you feel like, oh, maybe just frame the questions in a way that will make me look bad or will make me look like I don't know what the person is about. Well, yes, possible. So just best to accept your shame as this and ask for help pertaining to what the problem is, just and not try to circumvent or frame the question in such a way that you look like, well,
you're on top of the game, but exactly. Then you're feeling shy to actually, like, there's nothing wrong with not knowing, like, there's honestly nothing, because you can't know everything. Like, the tech space is just so broad, it's impossible to know everything, but yeah, you just have to own up. And I think, in my opinion, like, this links to communication, as Barnabasi said, and there are some questions. You basically have to put all the information out there to make things easier and quick for the person helping to respond. And there are some questions which I normally think you should ask or you should have answers to. So I think the first one is you should always try and like identify the problem. So like, what was the problem identified which you're trying to fix? And the second thing is like, what is the desired behavior? Like, what are you trying to achieve, right? And the third thing is, like, what steps did you carry out to replicate the issue? Or what did you do that led to you getting that
issue, if it's a bug or anything, like what were the exact steps you did that caused that issue? And I think the fourth one would be, what solutions have you tried out? Did they work? Like, did they not work? Like, why didn't they work? So when you put all this information out, it gives the person who is going to assist you a lot of context, and the person is not going to retry things which you tried already. That's going to waste his time, because you've already said you tried this and it didn't work. And in the fourth point, you went further to even explain why it didn't work or why not it didn't work. So when the person sees all of that, when the person sees all of that, the person could be like, okay, maybe it didn't work because you probably didn't do it the right way. So that makes it. So yeah, this is just all about communication as well. Yeah.
Yep. And on the issue of how to ask for help, I think one thing I've noticed, something which I'm actually mostly guilty of, is that you don't only ask for help when you face an issue. Sometimes if you're given a task, it's best to ask for help. Like ask for suggestions as to how to approach a task, especially from someone you're working closely with or someone who will review your work. So if you're given a task to work on, sometimes before you even try to tackle a task, you should at least have maybe talk about the task, think about how to ways that you want to approach a task. But then before you actually start the implementation, you sort of ask a suggestion, this task I'm working on, I'm thinking of going it this direction, but then there's also this direction. What are your thoughts on it? So not just that, so you shouldn't just ask for help when you meet a problem. But sometimes you can ask for help, just suggestion based help, for them to actually guide you, and you don't waste time on the tasks they're working on. And it also helps when it comes to code review, because you might take a certain approach to a task and then your code review will be you should change it to this way because this is actually much more better. And then you have to rewrite for you to do the whole thing.
Refactor the whole thing, and it's you're back to square one.
Exactly. So it's good to normally ask for suggestion based help before you actually start to get your
And I think another thing is, it's not an achievement not to ask for help. I don't know, I think some engineers think that I ran into an issue, I'm gonna fix it myself. Well it's good to fix it yourself if you can. But depending on the team that you work with, sometimes time is of the essence. So, for instance, in the teams I work with, we have this unspoken rule that, if you're struggling with an issue, especially if it's a junior dev, if you're struggling with an issue for a couple of hours, just dial someone in on a call or send a person a message or communicate through the right channel and have someone come in. Assist you, because you can't be wasting the whole day on a task. And majority of the time, there's someone else on your team, depending on how big the team is, there's someone else on your team who has expertise in what you're trying to fix. So then the quickest way to get that resolved is by just communicating with the person or asking for assistance, and you just get the work done as soon as possible.
Yep. Yes, I just agree with everything said, because one thing that most people fail to understand is that you're most likely, as a software developer, you're most likely going to work into a business, and the focus should be business. But you write code, write the fancy code and stuff, you write one liners that do multiple tasks and stuff.
Can I reoperate those?
All those fancy stuff. But then the base, the underlying thing, business strength, you're trying to manage it, and it's time, what about the system. So if you're going to spend a lot of time trying to think about tax, you could just call someone who will just help you out straight, away with your tax, you're just doing more harm than good, and you're not really helping the business, because you're just wasting time trying to be fancy or trying to prove that you gave them or something. I don't even know what I'm saying. So
yeah, because I've actually had cases where I was struggling with a problem and I decided to reach out to someone, and upon reaching out to the person and you start to discuss the problem, then you then realize that, the product owner or whoever laid down these requirements left out some key things. So then no matter how good you are, you would have just struggled and never figured it out if you didn't reach out to someone and then realize that, oh, there's some requirements that were actually missing. So yeah, it all goes down to communication as well. Again,
yep. So I think, since you said I want to go to Africa, what else do you think should serve as a guideline for contributing to the team?
Well, it's not just about the article though, but paying attention to detail. I don't think I wrote about that, but what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's actually quite important to pay attention to details, especially if you are new to the team, because you need to learn as much as you can in order to be productive or even provide some form of value to the team. Because the scenario is, you join a new team, they have an existing code base, fine, there's documentation, but you can't spend 1 month reading documentation, and you need to get up and running because you have to be paid for that month. So sometimes the best way to get up and running is to pay attention to everything that's happening in the team, and also pay keen attention on calls, because you listen to what people are saying and you ask questions as to what they're trying to communicate here, and then you learn, and as you learn, you know more about the business and trying to work for. So I think paying attention is actually quite important, and also not paying attention to only things that's software engineering related, but paying attention to other teams or departments of the business, because they might be directly involved in what you're probably trying to solve, and you might actually need their help in order to solve that problem. For instance, if you have a CRM team, they might be talking about maybe their acquisitions and stuff like those administrative stuff, and you might feel like, well, this has nothing to do with code, so I'm going to zone out at this part at this point in the meeting, and then you realize that you don't listen to anything, and then you're like, this is not relevant, but then you are just doing more harm than good, because all that they're saying is actually part of the business that you're trying to solve, and you need to listen, and the more you listen, the more you know about the business, and the more you know about the business, the more you can better help business to your code right. So point is that don't zone out on things you think isn't relevant in the meeting. You should try to pay attention to everything that goes on in the meeting.
Yeah, perfect. Another thing is how not to be enthusiastic when you join the team.
Come on. Everyone is excited when they join the team.
Yeah, everyone is excited. You should be excited, but there is a limit to how excited you should be. And being excited should mean
you shouldn't go around changing everything.
Exactly. So, for instance, let's say you join a new team. Hey, you're a software dev on a new team, and you gain access to their code base, and my God, you just, oh wow, this needs refactoring. Oh wow, this needs this. Oh, okay, I can do this better. Oh, okay, I can do that better. Yeah, as if you're smarter than all the developers on the team. So actually, I have a story. Actually, I have a story about, so I joined the company, right?
Yeah.
I was new, and there were a lot of expectations for me. So when I joined, I was assigned a car, a feature to work on. Fine. It wasn't too hard. So I worked on a feature, and I was just going to the code base, and I just started refactoring things. I could do this better. Why is this there? Why has this code been written like this? Yeah, I was feeling myself. So I just started refactoring things. So finally, I'm done with the feature, and I raise a pull request, and I can't merge it because the SonarQube gateway is asking me to write tests for every single thing I refactor.
And just a quick one. Sometimes writing tests can take twice as much time to that you used to actually write the code. So I'd like to hear this story.
And this was like a legacy system, so
I had to write tests for every single code I touched. And look, it actually, I ended up pushing like the feature actually spanned like 2 sprints before I was actually able to get it done. Meanwhile, it was just like a quick fix which I could have just done within a day. But then it spanned like over 2 sprints because I couldn't spend my whole time writing tests. So I had to be working on other features as well while doing that. And well, lucky for me, it wasn't that much of a priority. So I just had to be writing the test little by little and getting like full test coverage before I was finally able to have that feature merged. And yeah, this test goes to say that you have to read, like, I think this is kind of like a summary of everything you said. You have to read the company's guide, read the documentation, need to communicate with your developers well. These help you find out why things are done in certain ways. It's not like you're smarter than the people on the team. No, the reason why they wrote a feature a certain way is because probably that was how business, probably the decisions made by business led them to do things in that way. Or maybe there are other things to time constraints, priorities. It's probably not a priority, so they're not going to fix it. So why the hell are you jumping on fixing it? Yes, the agent of change.
I get a point. I've met the Mr. Agent of Change a couple of times. So on the point of being excited or enjoying, yeah, it's good to be excited, but you shouldn't be what the revolution. The guy who's come to change the company, because mind you, they already guys were there and the company was thriving. Enough for you to want to join the company.
Yeah, for you to join.
So you trying to become sure that yeah, you don't want to come to change everything and make everything work.
Have you seen that picture of like a cow and it's working with its breast, and there's a comment and it's like, if it works, don't touch it.
Yes. If it works, don't touch it. Except maybe if you're in for the long run.
Like, this is just a quintessential case of if it works, don't touch it. Like, what?
The thing is that fine. New technologies are great. For instance, I've been in companies where none of them use deploy the application of Docker or EDS and stuff. And then someone comes in like, oh, why aren't you guys using Docker? Because Docker is simple. Anyone can run Docker. The dependencies and everything is,
yeah,
it's simple to manage and stuff like that. And then they'll try to migrate them into Docker and realize that now it's going to be like months and months and months to come. And then they just, you know, forget about the whole thing. Or maybe they'll come in and they realize that we're using AngularJS instead of maybe Angular 2 Plus. And be like, oh, why aren't you guys using Angular 2 Plus? And then they'll start complaining and start talking like, yeah, the new boys, like, new guys in town, no, the latest thing and stuff. And they try to look at the code base and realize that, well, it's what millions of lines of code that you need to migrate to Angular 2 Plus. And then you realize that some of these things, it's not like they exist in the office of know about them. But then, as Selim said, if it works, it's best not to break it, unless maybe it's necessary.
Yeah, and there are business priorities. That's probably not a priority right now. So, but yeah, it doesn't mean it's not important to make suggestions. I've had cases where, like, I entered the code base, and so I think with one of the projects I was working on, I used this validation library at my previous organization. And when I entered the code base, I was like, oh, okay, I could just use this validation library. So I introduced it for a couple of features I worked on. So I think some months later, I just entered the code base and I was like, oh wow, it seems that's what they're using now. Like, people actually use the validation. Like, the other team members actually started using the validation library, which I introduced. And yeah, it makes work easier. But so you can suggest, but like, there's just a limit to how you should do that. And you just have to pace yourself.
And also, as someone said, it's not that new technology is bad, but then sometimes you just the migration, the amount of effort that will be needed to make the jump shift doesn't seem reasonable. That's why most of the time teams are still using maybe old technologies or old ways of doing stuff. So it's best to actually know why they do what they do or what's been done for you to just go about trying to suggest that they change everything to a particular what I call it, technology or something, because you're not the smartest one in the room. Most of them feel like, well, you're the best at what you do. And it's good. It's good if you feel like you're the best at what you do, but I mean, everyone has his meter, so.
Yeah, so I guess we said a lot, and we don't want this to be too long.
Well, we can talk about tech stuff all day, and all the problems we face all day, but
yeah,
we'll do that in episodes.
Yeah, but you guys should definitely read my article on Medium. You should check it out.
Yeah.
Guide for successful.
I think you should just contributions. Put the link in the description.
I'll probably do that.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot there that we didn't talk about here, and there's also a whole lot here that I didn't talk about there, so you could actually experience the best of both. And there's only so much we can say because the time doesn't really grant us that. So yeah.
So thank you guys for your time once again, and I hope you all enjoy this episode. Peace.